I would say the faster you fail, the faster you learn. If the company allows you to make mistakes, do them and learn from them. And don't overthink everything. Start small and iterate. Yeah, this is one of the other challenges that you have as an EM, because you shouldn't leave room for interpretation, let's say. You need to state the things clear. For me, what's important is find that sweet spot or middle ground between what people want to do in their careers and what they need to do for the company. We want to support all the squads with tooling, infrastructure, and provide guidance on quality in order to reach higher productivity and improve our product. Our approach is not doing, creating a framework and just ship it, create a presentation and okay, you can start using it, but actually find the early adopters from the developers, which whom we can pair program and share the things that we did. And then they can also spread the knowledge.
That's always what I was saying, like as a Scrum Master, we should be not needed so that the team can just self-manage. And now we think as a QE, you should not be needed, the team should just do it. And then the engineering managers I spoke recently, they were also the same, like they should not need me. So like basically developers need to do everything. And the rest of the people are just there to support, but like it has an expiration date. Hi, I'm Maria, and welcome to Agile State of Mind, the podcast edition, where I deconstruct the role of an engineering manager, try to make sense of the role confusion, and understand the challenges of the transition from a developer to a leader. You can find this interview both on YouTube and as a podcast. See the links in the description. And today, my guest is Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Maria. Daniel. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Great to have you here. Daniel is my ex-colleague from FreeNow, who actually still works there, because I was checking and I already interviewed a lot of people from FreeNow, but I think none of them works there anymore. So great to have you here. FreeNow is a ride-hailing app operating in Europe. You can hail a taxi, a ride, a bike, or a scooter. And Daniel and I used to be on the same team. Daniel was a QA and I was a Scrum Master. And today, Daniel is an engineering manager. And I assume still a big crafts beer lover. Is that so?
Yeah, definitely. I think lately not so much, because I started to run and, it's a bit tricky to handle all these things, but definitely still a fan.
Okay, because you used to even make like trips and travel according to your tastes, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Following the beer.
Yeah. Well, a lot of festivals here in Barcelona, so... which is kind of unexpected. I think if you come here in Spain, you expect to be a lot of wine, which it is, but there's also a lot of beer.
Okay, so that's good for our viewers to know that you can also visit Barcelona and Spain for the beer.
Definitely, yeah.
Great. So today we will talk about a little bit different kind of an engineering manager, because Daniel is a lead of QE team. QE means quality engineering team. And we will explore the transformation this time from a QE or QA to QE and then to a lead, and understand why we might need a team of QEs as opposed to have QEs distributed in the development teams. This is what I'm saying because I used to be one of the preaching, you know, having teams cross-functional with all different roles in one team so they can collaborate. So I would like to understand today how you see that, what are some good practices of testing, and also how you see the structure and organization of QEs in the company. So that will be one of our topics. So let's start from the transition. So you used to be a QA, I understand, and QE, and now you're an engineering manager. So let us understand a bit, what does it mean, engineering manager in your case, and how was the transition?
Yeah, so maybe before we start, some things regarding the naming.
Yes, please.
I think people well encountered a lot of different names for the same thing. I think we are called testers, quality assurance, QA, quality control, I've heard ACT, which is software engineering test, SDT, software development engineering test, and I think a lot more. I think in some cases you can opt in for a specific naming. In our case, it's quality engineering, so QE, because we tackle different issues across our domain. And more related to my transition to the engineering manager role, we basically were embedded before in different teams. So everything had one quality engineer, which is good in terms of software development lifecycle and focus on specific area that the team is working on. But then we've noticed that there's a lack of, let's say, overview on the entire domain. So I am in the supply domain, which deals with basically the drivers for free now. And we were so focused on the team level that I think we missed the overview of the entire domain. So how all the microservices interact with them, how different parts of the app interact with each other. So we don't have this holistic view over the entire product, as we were focused just on small parts of it. Also, some colleagues left, so it was kind of not scalable at that point to keep having three people for eight teams, because this is the amount of people we are right now. I have two more colleagues in my team, but we're hiring, so that's the,
okay.
The good part. If everyone is interested, you can find it in the careers page on our website.
Yeah, we can link it in the description as well if you pass it.
Sure. This was the decision to form a new team that will tackle all the issues in supply across all the platforms. So web, mobile, and backend.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask. So there are many things that I want to ask. I don't know where to start. So first, let's start with the teams. Like, what did the teams do? There is no quality engineer in the teams right now. So how the teams test their current development?
The weird thing is that people usually think that the testing or the quality assurance QA, it's the responsibility of the QA. Where in my opinion, I think development includes testing. So it's not just writing the code, but testing the code. Because how otherwise would you know if it works properly or not?
Definition of done, right? What it means to be done. And we have it's development done, but it's not done, yeah. Right?
Yeah, so it's not deployed.
Is
it's
it
not
done?
Released.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are different. You can have different flavors, let's say, of definition of done. In my opinion, I think development includes testing, includes deploying, includes releasing, until the final customer actually can use that part of uses the application that uses that part of the new development.
Mm-hmm.
So what the teams are doing, it's actually doing this process, either cross-platform testing or team testing. I think the most important thing is to mention what it's actually our purpose in this team, so that you can understand better what are we doing. And it wasn't clear at the beginning what we wanted to do, because we had so many ideas that we really want to really know, okay, what's our vision and what do we want to do. And basically, we want to support all the squads with tooling, infrastructure, and provide guidance on quality in order to reach higher productivity and improve our product. Basically, there are three pillars, I would say, that we're trying to tackle. One, it's in terms of process. So how are they doing the testing?
Within the teams.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Inside the teams, how does the software development lifecycle looks for each team, and how can we apply some standards across all the teams? So that maybe a bit of context. In our case, each team is a bit autonomous in the way they work, so they decide how they want to work, which agile framework they want to use, Kanban, Scrum, the ceremonies, and all of these things. So when it comes to testing, I've seen different approaches depending on the product, and well, there are many particular aspects to it, but we'd like to have some standards across the entire domain, because in terms of quality, I think it shouldn't be particular things, it should be general things that should apply no matter what you do. And there are so many testing layers that it's not that simple at the first look, but there are many shades of testing.
Okay. But that, yeah, that means that you provide support for them. You just don't do it for them, right?
It's a mix. So it's not scalable for us to do all these things. And we have so many microservices, we have so many things in our apps mm-hmm. that it's, I think, one, physically impossible, and I don't think it's the right approach, because you would be sort of a bottleneck in the entire process. As the traditional companies are working, they have a dedicated QA team, which we also have in a way, but we don't want to be separate from all the teams, but we want to work together. So our approach is not doing, you know, creating a framework and just ship it, create a presentation and okay, you can start using it, but actually find the early adopters from the developers, mm-hmm. which whom we can pair program and share the things that we did. And then they can also spread the knowledge further on.
Okay, so you are kind of a quality change agent within the company.
We would like to do this thing, and mm-hmm. it worked in the past, and I think it's something that it's still going to work. And it also will help us, as we're not experts in every platform, in every part of the app. So it's more like, you know nothing and you know it all. It's either one thing or the other. But we have, let's say, kind of T-shape. So we have a technology that we're most proficient in. But I wouldn't say we're proficient in all of these technologies mm-hmm. and platforms. So that's why we want to leverage the help from the developers who work together on these tools that are actually for them to make their lives easier and to help them be more productive, have less bugs in the end.
Okay.
Because you're always going to have bugs. It's just a matter of how many and the severity of them.
And when, where you find them, right? At what stage?
Sure. Yeah. And this is one important part, that it's for this first pillar of the processes. Mm-hmm. The first one, it's we want to help them improve the process. The second one, it's in terms of test automation. So try to improve the current frameworks that we have and build upon them. And the third one would be tooling. Tooling are, let's say, things that we do in order to automate manual work. So mm-hmm. for example, one simple example would be the release testing that we're doing. We used to create manually the test plan and doing all these things. So we actually now have a microservice and we just make a REST call and it creates automatically this thing for us. For the tooling, we're trying to automate as much as we can. We have various tools and we're thinking of adding even more.
Okay, just to give more context, right now it's an app for Android and iOS. So whenever yeah. you do a release, you have to release to both Android and to iOS. So there are like two separate apps that are alike, because we are talking here about the driver app. So the app that the drivers use to find passengers for their cars.
Yeah. So this part, I would say it's not visible to most of the people, mm. unless you're a driver and you're driving for free now. But otherwise, most probably you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So from this perspective, I think it's a bit more complex, let's say, to get feedback, because drivers are always busy. For passengers, well, everyone uses it and they can download it from the App Store or Play Store.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I remember that was always the part that it's great to be able to use your own app, and passengers, we even use the passenger app because we want to hail a taxi or get a ride, right? But the yeah. driver app, it's hard and you can't really enter in the shoes of a driver, because there's so many things that happen there. If you just put the app in your car, it won't be the same.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a lot of complexity that it doesn't seem so, because it's like, it's an app. it's easy, but there's a lot of complexity with that app. I remember I was participating in some of those testing.
Yeah, I remember.
the team testing parts. Yeah. Okay. So I really like the fact that what you mentioned, that you actually created a team. The team has a vision and a mission. So you create a team spirit, you create something that you, that is common for you, and so that also the developers can understand how they can make use or use your service, let's say. And how was it for you when you first started? Who do you report to? I would like to understand a little bit, like, okay, who do you report to? How is the structure right now?
So now I report to another, to a senior engineering manager, also in the supply domain. And it was quite challenging, really challenging, because at the beginning, you might think, well, you read some things, you document yourself, you think that you might be good doing this. But I think the actual learning comes once you step in the feet of a manager, and then you're faced with different situations, different, basically, things that you haven't thought about probably ever. What was helpful for me, it's the fact that I've been in the company for quite a while now, for 5 years. So I got to know a bit how we started, because I was here more or less since the beginning of the Barcelona Tech Hub. This knowledge helped me a bit, trying to not make the same mistakes that we did in the past, and maybe make new ones. Which I think for now it's an environment where you can make mistakes, but just don't do the same ones over again and try to learn from everything you do. So just small iterations, learn and then improve. But it's quite a challenge switching from individual contributor to a manager. I've been in this position since May, so 4 months, let's say. And there are different situations, because maybe you can take a team that it's already formed. And there you maybe, well, it depends on your approach, but could be harder or easier if the team is quite mature. In my case, luckily, I have two more colleagues that we know each other for quite a while now, and they worked here for 4 years now, and we know each other. It was just a matter of finding the best way to work together. In the end, it was about putting all our ideas on paper, let's say, and then deciding on what should be our purpose, our goals, and all these things, priorities as well. So we took most of the decisions as a team. Sometimes it's challenging because we are just three people and you think, okay, maybe it's going to be easier. I think there are always pro and cons for small teams, big teams. You have different opportunities, let's say, depending on the case.
Yeah, yeah. Could you name some of the challenges that you saw? Like something that really surprised you when you changed and switched and we were like, oh, I didn't expect this.
So one of the, I wouldn't say mistakes, but one of the things that I'm still trying to sort it out, it's actually moving from what I mentioned, individual contributor to manager, because you still want to be hands-on, you still want to contribute, but then at some point you realize that you lose sight of the overview or the most important things that you need to prioritize. So it happened to me once, and then I'm trying to calculate, well, basically trying to improve my time and self-management. Before, I think it was a bit easier because you didn't have so many things going on at the same time, and you could focus one day on something, maybe the other day on something else. But I think in the manager position, you're faced with different situations on a daily basis, and it takes time to change the context. So it's not just 5 minutes, it could be maybe half an hour, just to think over it and try to get in the right mindset in order to understand the problem. So yeah, time and self-management was an important aspect, which I think I now improved. I'm using some techniques that I think they're working. I can give maybe one simple example.
Please.
For example, I used to create my, let's say, weekly plan on Monday morning or at the beginning of each day, just set the goals for the day. And what I'm doing right now, it's setting everything up at the end of the day, because you have more clarity at the end of the day what you should focus on next week or next day. I think it's really a game changer, at least for me.
Okay, that's interesting, because you still have everything fresh in your head.
Yes, yeah. And usually in the morning, well, I'm a morning person, but I tend to forget what I was thinking yesterday or what were the ideas. Secondly, managing your calendar in a way. So I usually put meetings for myself in order to work on different topics, because otherwise you don't have this time constraint. So you're just maybe switching from one thing to the other. And then you realize that maybe you haven't focused enough on what you need to do. And for sure, I cannot multitask. So I need to do one thing at a time. And I think no one can actually do two things in the same time.
Wow, that's great. Like, that's great that you are so conscious about this, you know? I recently read about, I don't know if that's true, about how Elon Musk is organizing his day, because you can imagine he had like hundreds of jobs at the same time. And one of the things they were saying was that you need to put blockers for something, put like certain time that you will be focusing on one thing at a time, and then make like short breaks. What you also say, the switch of context takes time. And then again, and if you have, because, you know, in the end, it's like if you have a day to do something, you will do it in a day. But if you have only 3 hours, you will do it in 3 hours, right?
Because
we can spread. We can spread for a week. So I think this is very interesting, and I think this can help a lot of people. Have you ever tried the Pomodoro technique?
I cannot say I know which is this Pomodoro technique, but I will look for it.
Ah, okay. So this is like, it's basically what you're doing. It's just that Pomodoro is like this timer that you put when you cook, you know? So you put this, example, okay, now it's a bit different, because it's only about, okay, whatever you do, you focus, you switch off Slack notifications, everything, and you just focus for like, let's say 15 minutes at a time or 30 minutes at a time, and then it rings, and then you are, okay, now I can make some coffee, reply to Slack. And I think this is also very important, that we don't do this hygiene of Slack. Sometimes it feels like, okay, if somebody writes on Slack, it's important. It's like when you go to a doctor and you ask for an appointment, and if they look in your eyes, they almost start appointing you, and then they take a phone and they start talking on the phone. It's like, but I'm here in front of you. Deal with me. And then you will pick up the phone. So I think the same happens with Slack sometimes, that I see that in a lot of teams, that we have so many channels, and people used to, for example, put a lot of here and channel, you know, the forbidden thing. And I was like, but I get notified all the time just because I'm on some channels. So I think this is also something very important. And especially, I don't know how it's in Windows, but in Mac, you can just switch off all the notifications, you know, that do not disturb. You do your Pomodoro, then you undo not disturb, and then you check your messages.
So. Yeah, I usually do it, because otherwise I get distracted really fast. So this is something that I cannot undo. But I can try to fix it by disabling everything or just closing Slack and focus on those things. Yeah, what you mentioned about things that are important and urgent, I think this is also another challenge that I had regarding priorities, because we're trying to tackle issues and make improvements on all the platforms. So all of a sudden you have so many things that you can do that you don't really know what you should tackle first. So I think we're on the right track in defining the most critical things, at least this quarter, and moving on the next one. But it's important to keep these important and urgent things in mind when you decide on something.
So you also plan, do you have OKRs, or how do you do the quarterly planning?
Yes. So I think this job, it's not maybe just engineering manager, but also product in a way, because we don't have a product manager. So basically we're trying to figure out what we need to do, and we're going to do it. So it's starting from scratch and until the end. It's just us trying to get feedback from the stakeholders, which are mainly developers, but not just limited to developers. Our approach, I think, consists in two services that we kind of offer, let's say. One, it's the long term, that we try to focus on important things on each quarter. And we define our OKRs mm-hmm. in line with the company OKRs.
Okay.
And the second one, let's say it's quality as a service. So just ad hoc requests from different squads, because maybe they have a particular feature or something really specific that they need help on. And maybe they haven't done it in the past. And for example, we helped recently one team with some load tests and some end-to-end tests. So this kind of things that maybe don't require a lot of time, but it's important to do them and to share the knowledge. So we're trying to share this knowledge by having a good documentation and also peer-to-peer, either pair programming or being involved in specific thing.
Wow, that's interesting. So how do you gather those requests from the teams?
Well, so far we didn't have that many. We're trying to make ourselves a bit more visible because we don't want to be that team that no one knows what they do, but they do something. So I think it's important to work on visibility and transparency of our work. We try to create some RFC, so request for comments and request for proposals to tackle some of the issues that we have and to gather more feedback from the developers. Because I think going to the meeting, which is important to have this communication face-to-face, it's important to take notes. So I think as a general rule, you should always take notes for anything you do, because otherwise it's just a talk that gets lost. And especially now in this remote context, which is quite hard to, I mean, you cannot just call a meeting with someone just to talk about something that came into your mind. In the office, it was easier. Now we need to rethink a bit how our approach. I think we still need to do this communication because in my case, all my ideas come from having chats with different persons. It's really hard to be just by yourself thinking on something unless you bounce some ideas with someone and you get some feedback.
And so do you ever go to the office? Does anyone? How does that work in your case?
I don't usually go to the office, mostly because I created my routine in this home office so that I try to make everything more efficient, so don't lose time on deciding what where to work or be in public transport, although it's not such a big deal for me to go to the office. But I would like to start going more often. Now I usually go when there's a specific thing happening there, but I would like to maybe go once a week or once every 2 weeks. As we have this remote policy, so everyone is free to decide if they want to go all days to the office, stay in home office every day, or have this hybrid approach that they go 1 or 2 days to the office and 3 at home. From this perspective, I think we're quite flexible. And also, we don't need our team to be physically here in Barcelona. So you can have your team with people from, Germany, France, Italy, and Spain, and to be in the same team.
That's a very flexible setup, because I usually find that even if, after the COVID, the companies tend to at least ask for like 2-3 days from the office and then the rest from home. So if you can just say, well, I will just work from home, that's really great. But if you go to the office, is there anyone in the office?
Yeah. So I have a colleague from my team who is going quite often to the office. This is what I'm actually missing, a bit more of this informal communication, let's say, with maybe not colleagues from my team, but people from different teams. Because inside your team, it's normal to have a good communication and to be in sync with everything you do. But with other teams, unless you have a specific reason, it's hard to do it in a remote setup. That's why I think going to the office would actually make our lives a bit easier. The remote work, it's From my perspective, I think it's a temporary thing. I think people will still feel the need to go to the office every once in a while. Maybe not always, but if the company is flexible, I think that's a good work to have.
Yeah, definitely. I only work from home. And I tell you, after 3 years like this, I'm like, I would like to see some people and have a coffee in the kitchen, you know, and just talk, like you say. Like sometimes you can just resolve something in 5 minutes because somebody just saw you and was like, oh, yeah, actually, you could help me. And da-da-da, and you have it resolved. And this way, like we are now, sometimes you might not even find out about some stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. What you are saying is interesting because, you know, you would usually think about like a team lead or engineering manager. They basically, well, like Miguel was saying in one of the episodes, he said that the role is in the sandwich. You are like between the team and the management. But those people, they are usually between the team and the management. And unless there is like a very explicit dependency, the teams work autonomously. But your work is more to also do like a PR for your own team, right? Like, hey, we are here, we are doing this. And you want other teams to adapt whatever you are doing, right? So you need to do a lot. So you were explaining you are doing like RFCs, which I really like. It's like an asynchronous way of working together. But do you ever participate in like huddles or something, or like sprint reviews, anything where you can actually showcase what you did and to everybody?
In the current context, we don't have sprint reviews because, well, depending on the team, they work in different ways. It doesn't mean we don't have deliverables. Mm-hmm. If you want to find out what's going on, there are some newsletters that are being sent. Now, there are some type of sprint reviews, let's say, but they are monthly. It's not sprint review, but it's like monthly review, I would say, from different domains. That was something quite interesting.
So different teams showcase what they did, or how does that work?
Yeah, yes. Maybe not in that level of detail because, mm-hmm. well, we're growing and growing, and there are so many things happening that it's really hard to invite, I don't know, 200 people and then spend 1 hour on some things that could have been an email or a Slack message. So it really needs to be something relevant and important. So from this perspective, I think we're a bit more efficient than we were in the past. For our team in particular, the fact is that we cannot work as a separate entity. So we always need to work with the chapters or guilds, like Android, iOS, backend, frontend, or with the teams. We don't have all the things defined yet, as this is the first time we have a QE team in for now in Barcelona, at least. So, it's been 5 years. It's the first time we have it. Some things we still need to define how we work, and we're still making mistakes, and we try to learn from them. I think one of the most important things is to not do things that take a really long time at the beginning, because after that, it's really hard to see the impact that the team it's having. So it's better to try to solve things fast, and you don't need to have the full-fledged solutions from the beginning, but adapt and iterate on a proof of concept or something that you consider it's important. We try to make ourselves more transparent and visible, and it's still work in progress. And also share the tools that we currently have, because I would say not everyone was aware of everything that we have and that they can use. So we're in progress. It's work in progress, basically.
And it's a lot of communication, right?
Yeah, this is one of the other challenges that you have as an EM, because I think you shouldn't leave room for interpretation, let's say. You need to state the things clear so that everyone understands what you meant, and it's not thinking that, okay, maybe he or she meant something else. Be really specific and clear. And what changes a bit is that you're a bit in the spotlight when you're a manager. In the spotlight in the sense that more people are watching you. It doesn't mean like you're more important, but you have more eyes on you. That's it. Communication is and will be key to everything.
Yeah, definitely. Because I was thinking, that usually what I ask here is more about like, okay, how do you do one-on-ones? How do you collaborate with your team? And here, what I hear is more, how do you make sure others know about what you're doing and that communication part? But let's go back a bit. And being an engineering manager, you also lead the people in your team, right? So they report to you and you do one-on-ones and you care about their development and so on. So that's altogether another part that we haven't talked about yet.
Yes, that's a really important topic for us. As I mentioned, I'm for 4 months in this position, and the critical thing for us was to define our purpose and define the things that we want to change and to improve in the domain that we work in. I think we were mostly focused on these things. For me, what's important is find that sweet spot or middle ground between what people want to do in their careers and what they need to do for the company. So try to mix it together so that it's a win-win situation.
And people stay motivated, right? This way.
Yes. And until now, we kind of defined how we want to work and what are the benefits of working closer together. Before, we didn't work, as I mentioned, we were embedded in the team. So we didn't have so many common topics. We still had the chapter or the guild, the QE chapter, but I think it slowly faded away during this pandemic. So we kind of lost touch with other tech hubs from free now. And now we're trying to bring this communication back up and with the other tech hubs and between ourselves. So this is basically the first time we work together on a common goal and as a team, which sounds a bit weird because most of the traditional companies working like this have a team of QAs that they're doing just that job. But I consider that our purpose should be to make our jobs obsolete. So have developers owning and being able to do the whole process, including the testing. And I know there are pros and cons because in the end, you make developers do everything. And what do? Well, when we reach that stage, I'll probably quit my job. But it's hard to go in this.
I'm laughing right now. I'm laughing because that's always what I was saying. Like, as a Scrum Master, we should be not needed so that the team can just self-manage. And now we think as a QE, you should not be needed. The team should just do it. And then the engineering managers that I spoke recently, they were also the same. Like, they should not need me. So, like, basically, developers need to do everything. And the rest of the people are just there to support, but like, it has an expiration date.
Yeah, I think you're right, but in the end, it depends how long does it take for them to do one job. So for example, if they need to do the testing and it takes them 2 days instead of 1 hour, then that's the part where we want to contribute to. So to make their lives easier and have the proper frameworks and proper tools to do it in an efficient way and scalable as well. And regarding what you mentioned about Scrum Masters, we also don't have Scrum Masters. We have some Agile coaches that they build quite a good documentation in terms of frameworks that we can use and more things about Agile and OKRs. And we can always reach out to them in case we need their help in facilitating maybe a meeting or trying to prepare for a meeting. So the role of the Scrum Master, let's say in all the teams, it's taken by not by the engineering manager, but by all the people inside the team. So everyone takes their turn in facilitating the retro or other types of meetings that we have.
So you almost reached that goal, right? In free now, because I usually reference as like one of my best examples of an agile company, I tend to reference Free Now because I think we started well in Barcelona when we still had Nico Gonzalez, and we started making the foundations with a lot of ownership for the people, with a lot of self-organization and like self-managing I think the delegation of any of the decisions to the teams was quite big, right? So even when we started and we were growing the teams, how they could split, we were providing some boundaries, and then the teams could split. They could define who goes to which team. We would say, like, we need one oldie developer who worked here for like 6 months in the back end, and here we need also one, and then we can have one that works less time and so on. And then people just self-organized to do that. So I think, do you think that really helped? Because, well, you don't have the experience outside of Freena for 5 years, but I tell you, when you go out of there, for me the biggest shock was like, not every company is like Freena. People struggle to understand the dailies, why they do them. They just report to a lead, you know, or PM. People struggle to do the retrospectives. They don't think they even need them. And you see that, well, some people out there struggle with stuff that we thought the team can perfectly do it on their own, you know?
Yeah, this is an important topic that you brought up. And I think we have the proper foundation, and we don't have those dailies that, you know, take more than 15 minutes. Sometimes it takes less and focus on the blockers or the most relevant things. Yeah, basically, it's everything set up, and we just need to keep on doing the right things. From this perspective, I think we're in a pretty good shape. And one important thing is to offer the teams autonomy to do the stuff that they want to do, and to feel that their decisions are taken into account. And this is what I really appreciate about Freena, that you have the power to change. Well, to challenge some of the decisions and challenge the status quo of the things. So if something is not working, we should change it. I don't know if it's generally valid for all the domains and all the parts in Freena, but at least this is my impression from the supply domain, from the technical perspective. And people feel more empowered to contribute and to bring new ideas to life.
Yeah, that's great. I really like that part of Freena. I always reference to that for it. But it's actually a bit funny, you know, the circle. So we start from waterfall companies where there is like a team of testers, a team of developers, a team of front-end developers, and a team of back-end developers. You know, and a team of testers. And then we do like this agile lean thing. And then we go back to having teams apart because the service they provide is totally different. But when you think about like the structure, it gets very similar because, you know, like the agile coaches moved apart, the QEs moved apart because the team is self-organized and the team can do it on their own. So they just need support from outside, but they don't need somebody to do it for them because they cannot do it, right?
Yeah, you are spot on with this thing, I think. I think it's the best approach you want to follow to make people, well, the teams autonomous and be able to not have this kind of bottlenecks in the process and be able to do something from start to till the end. And I think history has a tendency to repeat itself. Sometimes you find yourself in situations that you've been before, but what changes is the context and the people. So it's not always the same thing, but there are some circles that you will see at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I also think, you know, the key word here is the ownership, because right now you can really see that the teams own the product from the beginning till it's in the hands of the customers. And this is something really great. And I think that's a goal purpose for many teams to be there, to get to this point that you don't have this throwing over the fence, like, oh, hey, I'm development done. I go home, bye-bye. And now it's the QA. And then the QA has to give it back. And it's like, bugs. And then again, it's just very frustrating this way, right?
Yes, and in the end, you want to make everything more efficient. So to remove as much as you can the dependencies, And well, QA Scrum Masters are the war a dependency. I would say that now they're not so much, but you still need them at some point. And I think the more you get faster feedback from the initial phase of development or prototyping a new feature, the more chances you have to succeed. Because if you start working on a big feature that takes 6 months, and then you're not sure that that thing is going to work out and everyone is going to be happy about it, like the end customers, I think it's better to get faster feedback at the beginning. And this is what we try to do also in the QA team. So try to empower developers to have the proper tools to do the proper automation at the beginning. So after they write the code, but at the beginning of the development process and not towards the end, before the release or before deploying. And it saves money, because if you find the bug, then it goes back to development, then try to figure it out, reproduce it, then try to have the fix, then release the fix, depending on the technologies that you have. So the more you go to the left, the easier it gets.
The shift left, right?
Yeah, if you see it in a visual way, because maybe it's hard for everyone to visualize it, but from the left, it's basically the beginning of something new, and the end, well, it's what the customers see.
Yeah, so it's also interesting, because right now in my company, we have this initiative that is called Start Well, because that's where you need to lay the foundations, right?
Yeah.
It all comes to the same thing. We discovered the same root cause. Like, if you start well, it's easier to end well as well, right? If you start not too great, then you can pray and hope for the best.
One important aspect is be able to adapt easily to change, because one way or the other, things will change, and how technology evolves nowadays. What works now, maybe it won't work in 6 months or 1 year, because when people change also jobs, maybe have different teams. You can go back to the initial phase, make the same approach that you had in the past, but with different people, that maybe now it works. Just try to adapt to change, because it's inevitable to not have change.
Yeah, that's a good one too. And I think we still struggle. And people feel like, oh, status quo, I love status quo. It's just so great. It's how we do things here.
So I think the phrase in China was, the only constant is change. So
yeah. Well, we have been talking almost for an hour now, and it just passed very quickly. I usually have two questions to finish. So first one is, what would be your tip? I usually ask the tip for a developer. If they are thinking like, oh, I would like to change and be a manager, but here I would like for you to think about a QE, if they are considering what is my next step in the career, and if they want to become a lead, a people lead, what would be your tip when they start?
Yeah,
what could help them?
Probably a lot of things, and I think there's no silver bullet for this. Maybe some things work for different people. Some things that I think are important, it doesn't matter if it's a QA developer or whatever the background, because in the end, it's shift. If you switch to a manager role, of course, you need to have the background in order to have this technical conversations with your peers. But one important aspect, it's active listening. So you need to listen more than you talk. And I'm not a person that talks a lot, but I feel like recently I started to talk more when I should listen more. So just listen without the immediate action shouldn't be to reply, but to understand first what the people are saying, and maybe try to have the last word, have a meeting just to understand everyone's opinion. I would say the faster you fail, the faster you learn. If the company allows you to make mistakes, do them and learn from them. And don't overthink everything. Start small and iterate, because otherwise it's hard.
It's overwhelming.
And prioritization of what you need to do. That's also a key aspect. And I think you can read a lot about management, like you can follow different influencers, let's say, on the in the tech world, but it's completely different when you step into the role. And be ready to be surprised, I would say. Don't think that, oh, this is something new I wouldn't have imagined. So probably no one can imagine all the situations you will be in. Yeah, just have a positive mindset and things will work out. And maybe this is not for everyone. I mean, you can still feel that maybe this is not for you, because in the end you can follow two paths. Usually in a company, you can go in the manager path, or you can go in this principal, staff, engineer, that you're more proficient in a specific domain or platform. It depends. If you like people, probably go with this approach first. If you like more the code, what makes you a good individual contributor doesn't really make you a good manager, I would say. Not necessarily. You can be both, but it's hard.
Okay, thank you. That's very interesting, very helpful for the people. And the last question is about, we talked about a little bit about that, about the future of leadership in remote, because, you know, it gives new challenges. You used to just be in the office as a leader, and you could see how people feel, how people react, act, and so on. And right now it's so scattered. So how do you see this leadership in remote? Because we already spoke, you said that this probably will stay, but people will go to the office from time to time. How about leading in remote?
It certainly comes with different challenges. I would say you shouldn't micromanage people, and you should by default trust the people you work with until proven otherwise. The first thought would be trust. And as long as there's trust, you don't need to control people's schedules. Or to give you an example, we have different schedules in our team. So some people start early, some people late, some days early, some days late. We just agreed on some core hours for meetings, for example, and everything is going as expected. I didn't really notice a challenge, maybe because we were used a bit also in the past, because you could have worked before the pandemic from a different location for a while. I don't really see a problem currently, but definitely for people who really like the office and really like this face-to-face interactions, like physically being in the same place, it's complicated. But in the end, it's just a matter of figuring out what works for all the people in the team and have some common agreements regarding when you put the meetings and all of these things. In the end, it doesn't matter if you're in the office or not. But from the perspective of having these informal chats, I think it's complex, and it's not so easy to just grab people into a meeting to talk about random stuff. That part, I think we can just mitigate it somehow, but we cannot solve it. We tried different approaches like coffee breaks and things like this, but when you're at home, I think you're a bit more focused most of the times, because there's no one I know coming near you and asking a question, or so you can really have time to focus. But yeah, it comes with other cons.
Okay, thank you for that. I think you are also in this special situation, because you can just stay at home wherever you like, and this gives on one hand a lot of advantages, but on the other hand, some challenges as a manager, right?
Yes, but I think there's nothing you can not overcome. It's just trying to find other solutions. And I think what's important is, so don't assume you have the same things in remote that you had in the office, because the context is different. You just need to come with different solutions. You cannot apply the same solution to both of the situations, exactly. Not always.
You mean, for example, the async communication and more documentation and stuff like that?
Yeah, so for example, if you ask someone, a person, a question, don't expect to reply in the next minute. In the office, yeah, you could go and basically, and disrupt in the end, because if someone is focused and you come nearby, just have to live with it. And well, for some people, maybe it's not the ideal situation, but I think it works. I mean, we're still doing the same thing, and I don't see the quality of the work decreasing in any way. Maybe just having more focus.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Okay, that was very interesting, and I'm happy we had a chance to talk to each other after, I think, almost 3 years, right?
Yeah. Thank you very much for inviting me, and it was a pleasure talking about this kind of things. I know that I don't have so much experience in this new role, but if someone sees this video and takes at least one idea, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I really have mostly people that I have not a lot of experience, some people that have and some that don't, because you still remember all the challenges. Those people that work in the role for years, they forgot what were the challenges at the beginning. So this is really important and helpful for those that are considering the switch. So I'm very glad we had this chat, and I'm happy that we also mentioned a little bit of what's the difference between all the naming of the roles in QA world. So I think this will also be very profitable. And it was for me to understand different names. So thank you so much. It was great. And yeah, let's see if we talk soon again. Bye-bye. Thank you.